Hello, friends. Craig Ballard, Jays Talk, kicking it as per usual, loving the walk-off with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good morning, sir. How goes it?
Living the dream. We got 2 out of 3 from Baltimore, which I guess is something to celebrate.
I guess, eh? Not inspiring a lot of confidence, but they got those 2 wins, and they got 2 against Detroit, and this team is still somewhat in it. My lack of enthusiasm, I mean, they've got a big mountain to climb here, but September 3rd, and they're not out of it going into a big series here against Oakland. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined, as always, by Adam Mack. We have started separating our news portion of the walk-off and our guests. Now, what we're going to do today is go back to the old format a little bit here because we had Craig Ballard of Jays Talk from TikTok. A great little channel there. If you haven't checked out it, he has some fantastic Jays content and it's daily, so that's fun. So we're going to throw to Craig here shortly because we had him on the show yesterday, and pretty much because it was an off day, we just talked everything that we would talk right now. So we figured instead of being redundant that we would just go to our guest. Of course, all of our guests are brought to you by YourRate.ca. Darren Brown, the mortgage broker, sure to help you get into that mortgage that you're after, whether you're looking for a new mortgage or to re-up on your current one. YourRate.ca is the how to do it. Safe, online, COVID-free, and paperless. Darren Brown, always good to help you out. All right, so we should just throw to him now, I'm guessing, eh? We'll give the socials and just go right into it.
Yeah, we dove into everything with Craig. Great talk. So let's just jump to it.
Okay, sounds good. So you can follow us on Twitter at Walkoff Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram, The Walkoff Podcast. And of course, all of our guests and all of our new stuff is on YouTube. And you can get us wherever you get your podcasts. All right, everybody. Enjoy. Cheers.
Runner goes trying to steal third, and that one is belted to left center field, and that baby's gone.
Hello, friends. Craig Ballard, Jays Talk, kicking it as per usual, loving the walk-off with Scott and Adam.
So thrilled to be joined by today's guest, Toronto Blue Jays content creator, his TikTok Jays Talk account. Honestly, just a joy to tune into here. Craig Ballard, welcome to the walk-off, my man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for having me on. Are you kidding me? This is my pleasure. I'm my debut on the walk-off, and I'm about to spend part of my day talking Blue Jay baseball. That's a yes, please.
Oh, yeah, just a win right across the board. Hey, yeah. We're excited to talk some Blue Jays with you. And first off, man, honestly, really enjoy Jays Talk. Brevity is definitely an art form, and you are nailing it, my man.
Oh, much appreciated. I really appreciate it. It's funny you say that. That's what attracted me to making the videos on TikTok first and then putting them on the other social media platforms, because I just like the TikTok format. When I first started, it was 1 minute. Now it's up to 3 minutes. And I totally agree. You know, in this day and age, attention spans. I didn't mind the quick hitter stuff. And I have a full-time job, too, to be totally honest with you guys. Like, yeah. Just from carving out time to be able to do it, it really fit well for me. I'm really pleased. I'm really enjoying it.
I was going to ask you if the length is what attracted you to TikTok. Yeah. I love hearing that that's exactly what it was. So let's get into it here. We are September 2nd, exactly 30 games left for the Toronto Blue Jays. They are still somehow 4.5 games out of a wild card spot. Massive series coming up against Oakland. I think it's probably the first time where we can honestly say do or die. How much optimism do you have left in this season? And I mean, I think we're both in the same boat here, Craig, where we've seen enough baseball to know that 4.5 games back at the beginning of September has been done before. It isn't an insurmountable mountain to climb. Do you still have hope for this team?
totally honest with you, gentlemen, here, there's never been one moment, and this includes the preseason and offseason, there's never been one moment, gentlemen, and please don't just kick me off the show at this point, but I've never felt that playoffs were on the table for the 2021 Blue Jays. I really feel that this playoff window is opening next season, and it's going to be open for upwards of 8 to 10 years. What Shapiro and Atkins are building here is the first sustainable contender this franchise, this organization has ever known. It's why I'm really excited about it. Now, just because I never felt that doesn't mean, as you've just laid out, well, wait a minute, no, Greg, there's certainly not mathematically eliminated. What do you mean? Are you saying there's no chance? From the scenario, I would say there's a chance. And I was thinking about this last night. If I were to take myself out, you know, take my Toronto Blue Jay hat off and just, and it was a different team, another team that we were analyzing that was in this exact scenario, I honestly would be looking at, you need 2 out of 3 from Detroit. As bad as it may sound, because Baltimore's so bad, you need 2 out of 3 from Baltimore. Then if you get 2 out of 3 from Oakland, that's 3 straight series wins. That's a 6-3 run heading into that Yankees series. I would think there's a chance. So I actually do still think that there is definitely a chance here. As much as it, you know, we all wanted to sweep Baltimore. We're all disgusted with that roster. We're all so upset with that game 2 loss. I get it. And the Jays not playing well lately. But I think the truth is, just from the X's and O's, just from the sheer math of things, there's no doubt they're still involved in this series. And to your point, take 2 out of 3 from Oakland, go into New York, start because what I'm concerned, gentlemen, is those 6 games coming up with Tampa. So if I'm the Jays, because Jays never flipping beat Tampa. So if I'm the Jays, I really, it's got to be winning series after series after series. The Jays need to set themselves up in a position where in those 6 games with Tampa, 3-3 is acceptable. That's where I am right now.
No, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, the way the Jays tend to go, though, is we're going to get swept by Oakland. And we're going to totally write them off and go, season's over. And then we're going to sweep the Yankees. We're going to go 4-0 against the Yankees and go, oh, look at this.
Look at this. Yeah.
Well, that is kind of what this season has been. It's been a wild season. And I can't remember a Blue Jays team that has been quite as drastic with success and failure in so many facets of the game, right? Like, think about the fact that the bullpen, starting rotation, and offense have all alternated between being below league average to far above league average in all 3 of those, which is just wild. And the hot and cold we've seen this season is a big part of why I think the Jays are on the outside of the playoffs looking in right now. Do you think this is a sign? I know you kind of said you've always kind of viewed next year as the true window for contention when it really starts to begin here. Do you think that this season is a sign of a young and an inexperienced core and growing pains? Or do you think it's injuries? Do you think it's all of the above? Like, why do you think this team has been so hot and cold this year?
I love the idea of the all of the above. There's no doubt, gentlemen, if we're just being open and honest here, and this is not just because we're Blue Jay fans. And anyone objectively looking at this would say, holy moly, are you seeing these injuries right now? Oh my God, look at this injury list for the Blue Jay. And look at how that got injured. Are you kidding me right now? It's fluke. The Jays have had 2 pitchers slip on stairs this season. Are you kidding me? My goodness. So there's no doubt the injuries have played a part. I absolutely think it has something to do with the inexperience. What's incredible, you gentlemen talk about the extremes this season. Innings 1 through 6, this Blue Jays offense is historically, in the history of baseball, historically one of the best, and we'll see where it all works out at the end of the season. As you mentioned, 30 games left. But right now, innings 1 through 6, one of the best offenses in the history of baseball. Would you believe? Innings 7 through 9, one of the worst offenses in the history of – this is not opinion, gentlemen. These are the stats. These are the facts. So you talk about extremes, my goodness. And I get that the bullpen gets a lot of slings and arrows. I get it. But if you take your mind's eye back to the victories that really frustrated you, weren't there big opportunities for big runs in the 7th inning? Weren't there men on base in the 8th inning that didn't get cashed in?
Offense. Right? Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And you're nailing it there because, yes, the bullpen has cost this team games. Like, flat out, we can't argue that. Obviously, it has. That said, the amount of times the bullpen has cost us the game and we lose 4-3 and you're just like, they had the bases loaded with 1 out in the 8th. How is this happening? Right? Like,
I used to have long, luxurious hair, gentlemen, before the season. Long, luxurious hair before the season. That is taken care of now.
So I got to ask you, because everyone is screaming it from the mountaintops, Charlie Montoyo, what are your thoughts on the man? Because Adam and I always kind of give him a little bit of leeway, and my personal opinion is that I don't think that the Toronto Blue Jays we're seeing right now win a World Series under Charlie Montoyo. That said, he does take a lot of slander that maybe isn't necessarily deserved. Where do you land on him, and do you think his job is on the line if they don't make a wild card, or do you think that them re-upping his contract and making sure that he is there until 2023, do you think we're going to see him next year, whether we like it or not?
You nailed it. I think that's all the rhetoric and all the action the contract grips. So not just the talk, the walk as well, is that, hey, this guy's here to stay. Buckle up, Jays fans. He's your manager for at least the next little while. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I feel that at this point of the season, I think for a lot of the season, I was right with you, gentlemen. Some good moves, yes, or some bad moves, some question moves, sure, but hey, some good moves too. Hey, let's not ignore that. There's a balance here, yes. As we've gone further, for me personally, gentlemen, the questionable moves are starting to outweigh the moves that I liked. I will admit that there. My biggest thing for Charlie Montoyo, and I keep hearing, well, Craig, he's such a great guy. The guys like him so much. I keep hearing attributes that are great for a bench coach. The issue is he's the manager. So the strategy, and if you have an issue with Charlie Montoyo, it's not him, the person. He seems lovely. He seems wonderful. It's with his strategy. And the problem with him being the manager, or maybe I'm putting it too far to say problem, but the thing about him being the manager is the buck stops with him. The final strategy decision stops with him. And I absolutely think some of the strategy has been questionable. For me, I'm really interested because when you hear the Keegans and the Gregors, when you hear the beat writers that follow the Jays, they seem to paint a picture and tell a story that, well, Craig, that was Montoyo making that decision in that moment. Yeah, but can I tell you something? That was all with the backing of the front office. That was all a move the front office would agree with. So that's why I'm a little bit torn on this, and leads me to your original point that, Craig, do you think this guy is going anywhere? I really don't.
And that's why you keep hearing the term collaborative. It's a collaboration, right? And that's where the sticking point for Adam and I have kind of been this season is like, I'm with you, man. I'm at the point where I'm kind of at the end of my rope for Montoyo. I feel like he has probably done the most for this young core that he can, and I could be wrong. I hope we're all wrong. I hope that the Jays go on a run, and at the end of the season, we're like, you know what? We owe Montoyo a big apology, right? But he does have this like lack of urgency to him that, from a fan standpoint, is frustrating, right? And I know that 162 games, you can't be losing your mind every game because you're just going to drive yourself crazy. But it does seem like when maybe major league ball players should be playing, he's fiddling with the lineup in odd ways, or, you know, again, you can always put under a microscope every individual move, but like you said, I just feel like it's been piling up. But if they were to go a different direction, with it being so collaborative, that means they clean house, right? Like, everyone's like, John Schneider should be manager, but doesn't it just mean that they move all of these guys? Like, unless, I don't know, like, you'd think if we bring in a new manager that they're going to want their own crew under them, right?
My hope, and it's been for a couple of years now, I was always very impressed when Shapiro in particular brought Terry Francona from a Boston, from a very successful, very high profile Boston program. Hey, Terry, how'd you like to manage our small market Cleveland, low budget Cleveland team over here? And Terry Francona said, what, a chance to work with you? That's a yes, please. So I've always hoped that there would come a time, and this may be it, gentlemen, that Cleveland window that they opened may be closing because it's a small market. They've already had to move on from Lindor. They've already had to move on Carrasco. They've already had to move on from Kluber. May have to move on from Jose Ramirez. Yeah. So maybe the grass on the other side of the country, and the other country in Canada here at the Rogers Centre, Sky Dome for most of us, but Rogers Centre, maybe that grass is looking a little greener to Terry Francona. And I literally wonder, gentlemen, if you could even see a scenario. Remember Phil Jackson with the Lakers back in the day, had hip problems, had issues, only coached home games. You know, as outside of the box as it sounds, I actually wonder if there's a scenario like that in place, because Terry Francona, health-wise, is not doing well. This is now two seasons in a row. He's had to step away. And hopefully he's got that you know, under control or doing better. But if I had a wish list, my God, he would be at the absolute top. You talk about the job Montoyo's done bringing these young players along. That's probably what he was there to do. And then who's that veteran that can close the rest of the gaps and bring it home to a perennial contender? My God, for me, that's Terry Francona.
I mean, if they can pull that off, I'm all for that. And to go back to what we were just talking about, if it is Francona, then again, we're going to see Guillermo Martinez. We're going to see a whole new staff, right? Like, maybe Pete Walker survives. I think that's probably possible.
Oh, good call. Good point,
You know, he survived the last regime change, but...
with Montoyo, though, isn't he just like a big meat shield for the front office? Like, he's just because like the fans aren't complaining with the analytics department, and we kind of all understand that he is just, he's basically a robo ump, right? He's got the earpiece in, he's calling balls and strikes. Maybe that's why he's got no urgency. He's like, oh, okay, we're pulling this
pitcher.
They'll
let me know.
This is the lineup. I'm just doing what I'm told and bringing out the home run jacket when needed at this point, right? But like, maybe that's why he's just looks like he's just floating and no sense of urgency, is because he's just as puppet as it gets, right? Like,
well, when we talk about 2023, he may be well aware of that 2023. He may be sitting there feeling very secure in what's going on right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get into third base a little bit here. Listen, Kevin Smith, I do want to bring up Kevin Smith because I love the guy. He killed it all year at AAA after a lot of obstacles throughout his minor league career, makes his major league debut, takes over as our full-time utility guy with Espinal on the IL. How do you think he has been handled being sort of thrust into that role? Because his natural position is third base. We've already seen him start in left field and first base positions. He has almost zero professional experience at. Are you all right with that?
All right with it is an interesting way to put it. What I see is it's yet another. I wish I could cheese off the top of my head. It's just been a laundry list of super utility players. Shapiro and Atkins seem to really value that super utility. Yes, I think they think Kevin Biegel can be that guy. Yeah. Who have we seen? The Chris Drurys, the Alan Hansons. I mean, my God, the Eric Sogards. The list goes, the list goes on and on and on.
You need some flexibility when you're going to carry three catchers on your 40-man roster.
Oh, Lord. We're at five. They're at five catchers on the 40-man before the Riley Adams trade. Holy moly.
Three on your active roster.
Yeah. No, but I like how they're giving Kevin Smith a chance there. Personally, I'm saying that because I feel like it's something they covet. They're trying to give this young man a chance to see where he can fit in at the big league level. These moves are bringing him up and not having him play in the infield as much, trying to have him move around. The trade of Austin Martin, things like this are really intriguing me. Because I felt, I'll just connect it this way, gentlemen. I felt the entire season that Semien leaving at the end of this season was a done deal, like foregone conclusion. But now you're so willing to trade Austin Martin. Now you've brought up Kevin Smith and you're trying to find a role for him. The Groshans and the other infielders you have coming up aren't going to be far behind. So isn't it interesting that they're trying Kevin Smith out in different positions? For me, I'm interpreting that as the Blue Jays telling us, we've traded Martin. We're looking at Smith in different positions as well, other guys in different positions. Because on the surface, Craig, you may think that second base and third base are available next season. Can we tell you something? Things are going well behind the scenes with Mark and Semien. Only third base is available next season. There's only one infield spot up for grabs. So I think that's part of what's in play here as well. The Jays love and apparent need for a super utility guy. And trying to rejigger things because all of a sudden, I think they're seeing an opportunity to re-up with Marcus Semien.
I think you're onto something there. And while we're touching on third base, Kevin Biggio, man, I feel for the guy. He has had a rough season production-wise, a rough season health-wise. He's struggled to stay on the field. And now he just found out that he's done for the remainder of the season. And Adam and I have always been big Biggio guys, so we may be a little biased here. Where are you at on Kevin? Do you get a sense that 2021 is a blip, or is this who this kid is? Do you see a roster spot for him in 2022? What are your thoughts on Kevin?
I big time do. I think we take 2021, we crumple it up in the big old ball, and we toss that out the old window. I think it's very possible, gentlemen. At the very least, we know it's factual that much of the season he was injured. I honestly think it's possible that I think it's possible he did not spend one day healthy this season. I really think that's possible. Yeah. And that clearly affected things. We've seen when he's on what his potential is and what's badly needed. We see at-bats for Dickerson right now. We see at-bat. I mean, they brought in a Gregor Polanco. They're going to try him. They're desperate to inject some left-handed goodness into that lineup. Well, that can be a guy like Biggio. Gentlemen, I love the idea of Biggio hitting ninth in this lineup. With that on base percentage and turning that lineup back around, coming off a walk from Kevin Biggio, that's a yes, please. That's a yes, please. I absolutely think there's a roster spot. I absolutely think there's value for Kevin Biggio going forward. And I see what you guys are saying. It feels like a lot of the fan base has done the opposite. We've crumpled up. It seems like they're embracing 2021 as if that is who Kevin Biggio is. Right. And I just can't agree there.
And I think we saw a little sliver of it too when he first came back from his original stint on the AL. And all of a sudden, and what stood out to me, and I think you're going to agree with this here, on base percentage all of a sudden goes right back to where we have known him to be.
Yes.
Which I think his lack of plate discipline is what threw everyone this season. But you know what? When you're injured and you're compensating for something, like he had his hand problem, he had his elbow problem, like he continues to those upper body injuries, man, the swing is such a one tiny little thing off and you're screwed. Right? Like it's such a game of centimeters and millimeters.
Exactly. The hardest thing to do in sports is square up that baseball. And if I'm Kevin Biggio, I'm thinking to myself, 2021 didn't happen. I hit a home run at Houston in front of my family. That was glorious. That was wonderful. But wow, isn't it odd? That's the only thing that happened in 2021. Let's move on. I would just turn the page if I'm Kevin Biggio.
And you feel like this front office has enough confidence in him that he doesn't need to do anything spectacular spring training next year, right? There's a spot for him waiting for him, right?
I really think so, especially, gentlemen, going back to the previous conversation, this regime seems to love the idea of a super utility guy, and I just think that Biggio absolutely could fit that bill. Of course, what if there is no Marcus Semien re-up? Mm-hmm. No panic. We can slide Kevin Biggio right in there right now.
He could be an everyday second baseman.
Yes.
No worries.
Do you think they're going to bring in an outside candidate for third base? Like with Biggio being such a utility guy. So let's break this down just a second here, because I do want to just see where you land on this. If you had to bet money, do you think that third base is dealt with internally? Do you think that it is a trade on the table? Do you think they go out and get a free agent? And then on the other hand, if you just could have it exactly the way you want, Craig Ballard gets to choose who's playing third base for the Toronto Blue Jays next year, what route would you take?
I so badly, and I wonder if we traded some of the prospect capital for this, but I really want Jose Ramirez to be the third baseman going forward for the Toronto Blue Jays. Talk about a switch hitter. This lineup's completely bereft of switch hitters. No switch hitters. You talk about the flexibility he brings. He's just so darn good. Mm-hmm. Him and Vladdy as the leaders of that clubhouse, forget about it. You think it's a fun clubhouse now? Believe it or not, Jose Ramirez would even take it to another level. It would be outstanding. I think the unity on the team, I think there's so many intangible things that Jose Ramirez would bring that are through the roof. But I do think they're going to kick a lot of tires. Gentlemen, let's remember, for me personally, I think if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm shopping all three major league catchers this offseason, and I'm looking to see what the best deals I can get for two of them, to be totally honest with you. And then I bring in a veteran, whoever's left standing when the dust settles, and I bring in a veteran catcher to be the placeholder until Marino gets here as the everyday a catcher. And I wonder if one of those guys, even a Kirk, who I love, but I wonder if one of those guys could fetch a really good third baseman in return. I don't mind the idea of throwing money at the problem, especially if you're not going to re-up with Semien, then let's spend some of that money in the infield. Hello, Nolan Arenado. You know, can we get into those sort of conversations? So if I'm the Blue Jays, if by default I end up with in-house with the Espinal, maybe platooning with the Biggio or however that shakes out, it's probably not the end of the world. They're probably not devastated.
Yeah.
But trade and free agent, throwing money at the problem is my first preference.
So for you, you say go out, spend some money, and solve the problem. But if you could choose, you want Jose Ramirez.
Yes. That'd be my first and foremost. Cleveland, hey, we know that organization. The Shapiro and Atkins know that organization inside and out. I would bet you that, because remember, we saw a little bit of smoke with Jose Ramirez to the trade deadline.
I
would think that some of that groundwork is laid right now.
Yeah.
And let's revisit this conversation in the wintertime. Would not surprise me at all. If I'm the Indians, my God, I think it makes sense too. I don't want to give away Jose Ramirez. I want some good stuff in return. Well, doesn't the Toronto Blue Jays organization have legitimate return assets to offer here? I think that could be a trade partner.
Well, it's funny you even brought up kind of the disappointment in Austin Martin going, and my brain kind of worked the same way. More so than Austin Martin leaving, I kind of had in my head, you know what, there's the piece that gets us Jose Ramirez. But maybe they were flaunting, maybe they were, you know, teasing Cleveland with him, and there wasn't the interest there. Maybe they were like, okay, well, maybe this guy isn't who we thought. What is your thought on Austin Martin? Because I know it shook this fan base when he was moved. And one thing that Adam and I drove us nuts is, you know, 2 days after Austin Martin was moved, all of a sudden the Blue Jays fan base was like, you know what? He has no power and he wasn't that good anyways.
He's a bum.
Where are your thoughts on Austin Martin? And what do you think the front office saw in this organization right now that made them feel like they could move on from him?
That's a great question. I think one of the main things that with the Austin Martin to keep in mind, sort of an under the radar fact about him, is he landed in the Blue Jays' lap. There's no possible way, sitting at five overall, that the Blue Jays thought they were handing in their card and it was going to say Austin Martin on there. Are you kidding me? They would have thought they'd hand in the card Austin Martin, and the commissioner, this guy went number one overall. This guy's off the board. What are you doing, Blue Jays? Like, they did not think that was coming. So I wonder if they considered Austin Martin, and especially when you throw in all the other – I've never seen an organization, gentlemen, with so many middle infield prospects coming up like the Blue Jays. So when you throw all that in the mix, I wonder if they saw Austin Martin as found money, playing with house money. Now, it's still a significant asset to trade. I will say that. And absolutely. Woods Richardson as well. If that trade ends up being for a season and 2 months of Jose Berríos – wow, I'm very that's a massive price to pay, regardless of the depth. If there's a re-up coming with Jose Berríos, so now that's the trade, and you're getting Berríos in his prime years, you know, you're getting 4 or 5 years of Berríos. For me, I'm thinking that's a different story. But there's no doubt about that. It, gentlemen, you remember, it was the most incredible 60 seconds that I've ever seen on Twitter. Their trade broke. Blues had Blue Jays have Jose Berríos. The fan base went nuts. How amazing is this? 60 seconds later, the return assets were announced and the whole fan base went on fire. Yeah. What? Austin who? Traded where? It was so... the extremes were incredible.
Sure was, my man. And do you think Berríos is going to be re-upped? Like, are they waiting to do this? Or do you think there's literally no negotiations going on right now?
Well, I don't think there's any going on right now. No, I think that'll take place at some point next season. Right. I think Berríos is going to have a real good chance to re-up here. First of all, he owns the Rogers Center, pitches so well at the Rogers Center, and he's going to get that injection. Let's remember, gentlemen, remember how much Taijuan Walker wanted to return to the Blue Jays? He fell in love with the organization, and that's a guy that didn't spend one day in Canada. He didn't get any of the Blue Jay actual fan base at the Rogers Center. Berríos is going to have a year and 2 months of that crazy Skydome Rogers Center crowd that's going to hopefully go from 15,000 to 50,000 sooner rather than later. We already know he likes his teammates. It's such an easy clubhouse to be liked in there. It's a first-class organization. I think there's a lot of things that are going to point towards Berríos wanting to re-up here. So I think there's an excellent chance for that, yes.
So speaking of re-upping and 2022 here, do you see the Jays giving Steven Matz the Robbie Ray, the 1 year, $8 million offer, try and lock him up for one more season? Or do you think that their re-signing concentration is all on Robbie and Marcus?
Well, it will be. The focus will be on those gentlemen. I think it's like anything else with this Blue Jays, with this front office. If there's a bargain to be made, if there's a team-friendly contract, they're in. I think the Jays would take Matz at 1 year, $8 million right now if Steven Matz would be willing to do something like that. I think he'd be looking for something a longer term myself. One thing that just blows my mind about Steven Matz, because I feel like he's pitched well for the Blue Jays this season.
He has.
The Jays won. I thought so. The Jays, I feel like that as well. Now, the Jays won Steven Matz's first 4 starts. He's had 20 since then, and the Jays have only won 6 of those 20 starts. Yeah. So that's why I say, in particular, if you're the Blue Jays, even though you feel good about Steven Matz, how far are you willing to go with the contract? Because the truth is, the team did not have success with him on the mound. Not blaming Steven Matz. Now, truth be told, he had some issues in there. Fine. I'm certainly not blaming Steven Matz, but the results, when you just sit down and take a look, how did we do with Steven Matz on the mound? My goodness, the 3 years, $36 million contract, I think he's going to want, I don't think will be up the Blue Jays' alley. If it's something like what you're saying, Scott, a 1 year re-up, oh boy, I think the Jays would be all over that.
I mean, his numbers have been good enough to probably get him 2 years, $20 million type of thing is probably where he lands. I could be off on that.
No, I think double-digit millions are coming for him, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's done well enough where you're going to see any team go 3-4 years for him, but I think he can land a 2 year deal for sure.
Well, let's talk Matz for a second. Would be the number 5 in our rotation, right? We've got Ryu. Hopefully we bring back Ray. We got Manoa and Berríos. So we're only looking at that 5 spot. And he was just called up yesterday. Where does Nate Pearson factor in? Is he going to get another chance
to
be a starting pitcher next year?
He's got to play. Yeah, the Blue Jays front office, great question. And it's a great point because the Blue Jays front office seems hell-bent, hell or high water, that he's going to be in their starting rotation. I personally, I'm on the complete opposite side of that. I think he's way more valuable. This day and age, gentlemen, if I have a starting pitcher that's healthy for an entire season, I probably get 30 starts out of that pitcher. Yeah. And with this Jays offense, how many times did I really need my starting pitcher to be great? How about a high-end, high-leverage back of the bullpen guy? I can use him 70, 80 times a season in big scenarios. And in this day and age, what do we know about that bullpen arm? It better be blasting, you know, high 90s every damn time. That's Nate Pearson. When you hear Nate Pearson talk about his injuries, he really, what he describes is a real disconnect between his upper half and his lower half. His lower half is so steady and controlled because his lower half, basically, think of, this is how I think of it, his lower half knows, hey, as a starting pitcher, I need something in the tank, 5 to 7 innings. So I can only, you know, I can't go 110% on every pitch. I got to, but as he describes his upper body and especially his mindset, right as he's about to let go of that pitch, he can't help it. He extra oomphs it to get it from 98 to 100. If, and now his mechanics are all wonky, it's led to a couple injuries for him this season. Mm-hmm. In the bullpen, you're facing, what, 5 batters maximum. You're there for one inning. Nate Pearson can come in pedal to the metal. Now all the mechanics are aligned. And by the way, that pedal to the metal is going to be 100 miles per hour. And literally the only good performance we've ever seen from Nate Pearson on the big league level was in the playoffs last year against Tampa out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it too. I think for sure his future is he could be our shutdown closer throwing 103 10 times.
Oh, Lord, love it. His high school coach predicted that with his throwing program, I'm not even kidding, I don't believe it, but I just remember an incredible injury. His high school coach, he said upwards of 108, 110. Like, are you kidding me right now? Oh, yeah. My God. So even if he falls just short of that, what are we talking, 103, 104?
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, the guy has it in him to throw. We've seen 101 on the radar already. Like, I think if you shorten that man's outings and make him a max effort guy, that I think 102, 103 is totally within his reach. And that's just dominant. That's just scary, man.
The trick is is convincing him to take the pay cut of moving to the bullpen.
That's right? True.
That's not a bad point. Yeah, that's not a bad point.
A lot of money on the line for a number one pick, right? Like a first rounder who has all sorts of hype and heat behind him as a prospect. So, yeah, there'd probably be a sales pitch involved to get him to go to the bullpen. Speaking of guys with all sorts of hype and prospect acumen, Vladdy has put it together this year, buddy. If you had to guess what his home run total will end at the end of the year, him being at 38 now, where do you think he finishes?
39 now.
39 now, that's right.
Oh, 39. No, sorry. I thought you were predicting 39 for the final. I was about to pass out. I was about to faint. Oh, my goodness. What just happened? Okay. I'll say another 10, another 10 or 11. So I think it'll push. I could see that. I could see that. Just because what have we seen from Vlad the last little while? Yes, the home runs have been back, but really that's the result. We've seen better approaches at the plate from Vlad, I think, recently. What did we see from him all season long? Just a complete attack mode, coming up to that plate with such an understanding of how this pitcher wants to get me out. So I can look for this pitch right out the gate in this location. And he's been so good at being aggressive with those pitches lately, like before this good run he had, the struggles that he was having, I found he was really getting away from that. I found he was really back to expanding his strike zone. And as good and as special as I believe Vlad is, when he's willing to expand his strike zone, he's another hitter, guys. We've seen this with Teo. Yeah. When Teo makes you come into the strike zone, he's outstanding. When he allows himself to be willing to expand his strike zone, he's an easy, easy out. You know, that's putting it too tough, but he's a gettable out, right, gentlemen? I think we would say that. So same thing with Vladdy. When he forces that pitcher into the strike zone, my God, that bat coming through that strike zone, that whip, that controlled violence that he brings that bat through that strike zone, it's absolutely gorgeous. And it's so funny, gentlemen, the apple has fallen from the tree on this one, guys, right? Because Vlad Sr. never saw a pitch in his life that he didn't like. Vlad Jr., when he's on, he's waiting for you to come in that strike zone.
And his defense improvement really shows.
Oh my goodness!
How important it is to him to be a great ball player, because defense is such an easy element to ignore as a 22-year-old kid with a bat like Vladdy's, and the amount of work
he
put in to become an exceptional first baseman. And I don't even feel weird saying exceptional. He's an exceptional first baseman. He might not be gold glove, but I bet you he's a top 10 guy in the league.
Well, when we started, when we started at the first half of the year, I know Scott and I were both making claims that Vladdy should be getting gold glove consideration. I think since
jokingly
then,
at the time.
Well, I was a little more serious about it than you, but since then, I mean, we've seen him struggle with some over the head deep pop flies. He can't seem to make that basket catch that we would like to see. But I think that's something that maybe he didn't even work on in the offseason, right? It was just taking those grounders, everything defensively, playing the bag, stretching at one, digging balls out of the dirt, you know. How many of those has he bailed errors from Espinal, Biggio, Bichette all year long, right? So I think, you know, give him an offseason to work on those pop flies, and he could for sure be in gold glove consideration next year.
It is wild to think that Bichette still might lead the league in errors in the American League for shortstops, but Vlad has saved so many errors for him, and he's only had one error in August. Think about how much, like, while we're talking about progression, like, think about the progression Bo has made. Like, yeah. From going, like, to still be close to the top for errors and have only one in August. Like, wow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is a guy you talk about. Both these gentlemen are willing to put in the work. And I love the point that Adam was making as well about the off-season work. I read just one of the most fascinating interviews I've ever seen with a player. It was Vlad in the offseason. It was with his hometown newspaper. So I wonder if it was because it was in his own language. He was just very comfortable. He was just so forthcoming. And he said, listen, the Blue Jays are talking to me about first base. Every day when I go to the field, I bring only my third base glove. I've told them, I made it clear to them, I will be your third baseman going forward. Once a week, I take my first baseman glove just to get that work in. So that's where he was this offseason.
Yeah.
He came to spring training. I saw Atkins say, listen, we sat down with Vladdy and said, we know third base is where you want to be. It's going to be first base this season. Vlad, let us challenge you to become the best first baseman you can be. And he has taken that challenge to his credit. You know, that's some Vlad Sr. influence on him, to be honest with you. He's taken that challenge, no pun intended. He's taken that ball and he has run with it. We're at the point, gentlemen, where his scoops out of the dirt. He's adding flair now. He's so darn comfortable with it. You're exactly
he's
right.
He's Grant Fuhring it.
Just yes. Oh, my God. Did you just take me back there? Wow. Wow. Who is that? Mike Palmatier. Wow. Did you just take me back? Holy moly. Wow. Yeah, no, I absolutely. I'm thoroughly impressed with the work that Vlad has done. And you saw the report, I'm sure, a couple of weeks ago where he's actually gone to the Blue Jays and said, listen, remember the convo we had in the offseason where I was telling you I'm your third?
He doesn't want to.
Can we forget
back.
That happened?
Yeah.
Can we forget that? And you know what, gentlemen? You know what's a funny little offshoot that person? I've never heard Vlad talk about this, but I wonder if he likes this. Honestly, when you think about this, he's so personable. At first base, he's getting interact with all the yes, he gets the – honestly, like, I wonder if that's something that contributes to the passion that he seemingly has for this position now.
You're always friendlier with the guy at first than when he gets to third.
At third, now it's a threat. Now, wait a minute. Hey, right. What the hell's going on here? Yeah.
So we just talked about how much progression that Vladdy has made. 22 years old.
My gosh.
Do you think that we could see him progress even further? Like, is this
1,000%?
You do, eh?
No way. 1,000%, yes. When I think of Vlad Guerrero Jr., I'm thinking once he hits his stride, gets in his prime, that's 334 every single season with 40 home runs and 123 RBIs. Every year, that's his baseline. And that's what I think it could be. I've never, gentlemen, I'm a Laker fan. I was excited about Kobe Bryant. You know, there's Blue Jays, you know, Carlos Delgado, Vernon Wells. There's guys that have come up through the system before, is my point, that I've been excited about, even in different sports. I've never, and I say that just because I don't toss out the hyperbole. I always, even though I'm excited, I still need to see it on the big league level. I still need to see it on that stage. I've never felt the way about a player like I do about Vladdy. I think right here, right now, and I've been thinking, Vlad's going to be a Hall of Famer, guys. I know that's, you know, as lofty as it gets. I've just never seen potential like what this young man has. And again, when he forces that pitcher into the strike zone, it is incredible. This guy is hitting 116 mile per hour singles on an absolute regular basis. Are you kidding me right now? His bat through that strike zone is so incredible. I think it's elite. I think it's top tier. And no, I don't think that we have capped out here at all. We talked about his willingness lately to expand that strike zone. as he grows, spends that offseason, you know, chewing the fat, talking hitting with senior, all of these things are going to improve going forward. The mental aspect is going to improve going forward. Remember a couple of weeks back, gentlemen, when he was even picked off on third at the end of the game, I don't know if this was a few weeks back now, and he just sat in the dugout brooding for a while after the game was over when they lost. These are all things, these are all learnings that are happening for Vlad. Vlad is still in a developmental stage, gentlemen, as incredible as that is to think. No, we have not seen the ceiling for Vlad. And how exciting is that, by the way?
100%. And the truth is, Craig, we haven't seen the ceiling for this team.
Agreed.
Like, look at what the playoffs appearance, and I know that expanded playoffs, 60-game season last year, but look at what that did for this team and that core and the steps that it moved them forward. And this is one thing I think, and I need to remind myself as this too, as a fan, is that this core is a bunch of 22 and 23 and 21-year-old kids. Like, I mean, if you're talking Alejandro Kirk and Bo Bichette, even, I mean, let's face it, man, Teoscar Hernandez is the seasoned veteran. Yeah. At 28 years old, right? Like, besides the two veteran free agents they brought in Simeon and Springer, this team is a bunch of kids in their early to middle 20s. Where do you see this next year? Like, this is, we're going to see progression, aren't we?
It's literally why playoffs were never really on my mind in 2021. For me, the paramount for 2021 was the development of this young core. Work out these bugs, work out these learning curves so that they are ready to have that playoff window open as early as 2022. It's opening in 2023 come hell or high water. That I can guarantee you right now. But I think it can open as early as next season. And the learnings from last season and this season are going to serve this team very well. We're just weeks removed. It was just weeks ago where Bo and Vlad passed their 162 career games.
I know, it's crazy.
My God, this is such a young core. Honestly, gentlemen, I wonder if we can even throw a Lourdes in the mix there. Like, what's he in his mid-20s or something as well? Yeah. He's not
that elderly. Also, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. So that's absolutely the and waves coming too, right, gentlemen, that we can be excited about. The Morenos, there's a lot of different waves coming. So the team, I see the Blue Jays, what they're building right now, as like Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa Bay does such a good job drafting and has an organization that's developing players. Now, with the Rays, once those players get to their big contract, they have to move on from them. There's the advantage the Jays have, because the Jays are going to be able to re-up with some of these guys. See, Tampa, as soon as Chris Archer is expensive, gone. Blake Snell, gone. You know, they have to make moves like that. The Blue Jays, I think, again, sustainable, building that core, but going to be able to add with payroll as well. So I think the Blue Jays can build something that's Tampa Bay plus. And for me, that excites the heck out of me. I hate Tampa Bay. They drive me absolutely nuts, but I got just, my God, gobs of respect for that organization.
It's an exciting time to be a Blue Jays fan.
And yes.
Even just to go back to this year, I think that despite how disappointing it is to a lot of fans that they're 4.5 games out of a wild card spot right now, they are still in somewhat contention. They're playing important games in September, and the experience that goes along with that for this core is something that they haven't dealt with before, and I think it's only going to increase their chances next year.
Couldn't agree more. And gentlemen, what I'm being reminded of here is, you think of, you know, 92, 93, that's the heydays. That's the two World Series championships. What people will forget is by 94, so the very next year, the Jays are one of the worst teams in baseball. And then from 93, when they won the World Series, to 2015, when they made the playoffs, that was the longest playoff drought in North American sports, right? It was the Jays. So of NHL, NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball. The Jays,
yeah.
Because 92 and 93 – Dave Winfield's available, cut him a check. Jack Morris, cut him a check. 93.
Paul Molitor, cut him a check.
Dave Stewart, cut him a check. What's that? The Padres can't afford the re-ups coming with Joe Carter and Roberto Alomar? Send them. The California Angels can't afford Devon White? Send them. That was the Blue Jays spending all the money in those years. And what we saw, it's the heydays. Thank you. The banners, thank you.
Yes.
But it wasn't sustainable. Not sustainable. And that's what Shapiro and Atkins are building here. You say it's an exciting time to be a Blue Jay fan. I don't know if any of you gentlemen have kids, but if our friends have kids, our friends' kids are going to grow up wondering, what was Uncle Craig always complaining about the Blue Jays for? I don't get it. These guys are in the playoffs every year. These guys are so fun. I don't get it. There's a new wave coming.
I'm here for those years, buddy.
Yes.
I can't wait.
Yeah, my daughter my daughter's 10, and she really fell in love with Vladdy at the Home Run Derby 2 years ago.
Oh, beautiful.
So that was a great time for her to really dive into baseball. So,
yeah, she's going to wonder what Dad was complaining about all these years.
Exactly, stinking Blue Jays. One thing I want to ask you about, do you think that this core is the kind of core that can get a new stadium built in Toronto?
Oh my goodness. Wow. Did you just hit me with a banger there? I've never considered that. Wow.
Reason I ask is Buffalo Bills have just announced their plans to build a new 60,000 seat stadium in Buffalo. That's a fan base that Bills almost moved to Toronto a few years ago.
Yeah, true. Right?
But
yeah.
Now they've got a window where they've got a real quarterback. The fan base is energized and they are making the most of the opportunity, right? They have public support behind taxpayer dollars.
Now,
we see the same thing in Toronto.
Well, Adam, first of all, I'm a Miami Dolphin fan, so I'm feeling a little personally attacked here by praising the Bills, but that's fine. I like you, so we'll move on. No, that's fine. No, I'm joking. No. You know what, gentlemen? I'm just thinking from a location standpoint, I wonder if it would be more renovations than new stadium. And you know what really struck me a couple of weeks ago? I don't know if you saw, Bo Bichette was waxing poetically about the Rogers Center. He says, hey, people seem to have problems with this, that. Can I tell you something? The players love it. So I don't know if it's really on the front burner, but you're reminding me, Adam, because wasn't there a story in the offseason, yeah, right? You're right. You blew my mind with that question there. Personally, I guess I'll predict maybe more renovations. But if there is going to be something new built or significant renovations, the Jays have got the right guy for the job. That's what Mark Shapiro did in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. He rejuvenated that whole ballpark, that whole thing. It wasn't a relocation of the ballpark, but he rejuvenated the whole darn thing. So if the Jays are going to go that route,
spring training complex.
Yeah, look what he did in Eden.
There you go. Yeah. So if they are going to go that route, they're in good hands. I'll say that.
Did you have anything else, Blue Jays, to add here? Craig, I had a couple questions for you just about Votto and a few things here. Did you, before we move on from the Jays, did you want to add anything?
No, I love it. I thank you guys for not just kicking me off the show when I said I've never really thought the playoffs were on the radar for the 2021 Blue Jays. Yeah, sorry. Just being open and honest. But hey, my God, you talk about a scenario where you'd love to be wrong.
Oh, of course, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I make realistic predictions, I'm like, I want my words to be shoved in my face. Please shove my words in my face.
I do think that a factor in the general Blue Jays fan base feeling like this is a disappointing year is just the fact that we made the playoffs last year and the casual fan doesn't realize that it was expanded playoffs last year. Like, we finished seventh and made the playoffs. We're in eighth right now. Our win percentage is essentially exactly the same.
I think that's such an amazing point. Adam, I think of the Blue Jay fan base, and I really hope that I'm clear on this when I say I don't mean disrespect. I just think it's what's happened. I think a lot of the Blue Jay fan base is new money. They came to the team during that playoff run in 2015, so there's not that understanding of why isn't Rogers just out here making it rain? Yes. I don't get it. Why didn't we resign? I don't get it. Did Rogers not notice it was 50,000 every single night in 2015 and 2016, and the country was on fire for this team? Yeah. I don't get it. So a lot of the new money Blue Jay fans aren't just going to have the realization that there is a progress here. There is a process, I should say. There is a process here. If it was easy, my God, every damn team would be doing it this way. But of course, there's going to be growing pains, and you need to have some luck along the way. How about the Blue Jays being? Remember, you can't draft an international player like Vlad. How about Vlad choosing the Blue Jays? There's been some luck along the way here too, gentlemen. Yeah. That I hope Blue Jay fans are appreciative of. Also, Marcus Semien could have gone anywhere for his Prove Me contract. He chose the Toronto Blue Jays. There's Robbie Ray, remember, he was the first free agent right out the gate. People couldn't believe there was a move today in baseball. And what? The Jays signed what? Remember, they signed him right away. Yeah. So there's been some fortunate things along the way as well. So in other words, I hope the fan base can, at the end of the day, take a step back and appreciate that 2021 actually wasn't the disaster that maybe it appears on paper because they didn't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And my God, how many fan bases right now? How many walk-off podcasts is, in Philly, all across, you name it, would wish that they had the disappointing 2021 that the Toronto Blue Jays had?
Absolutely.
By the way,
No, it's a very good point.
And you mentioned the luck factor. I mean, look, we lost Kirby Yates before game one.
Oh, my God.
How much of a difference would that be, right? George Springer, we're going to get less than 80 games out of him defensively. Right?
Look at Julian Merriweather that first weekend in New York. He was the second coming of Cy Young. He was the greatest thing we've ever seen in our life. And then by the time that weekend ended, he was already injured and everything had already fallen apart.
David Phelps. Like, listen, just
huge.
Like, you know what? Like, it's huge. So funny. Like, they had contingency plans for if there were injuries. They just didn't expect to be down to, like, plan F.
Right? Scott, literally, I'm so glad you brought him up. That's way under the radar for me, is the time that David Phelps, having him go. He's one of two injuries this season. You talk about the bad luck. He's one of two injuries this season where that the last out was recorded, go to commercial, come back from commercial, and all of a sudden there's a Blue Jay walking off with the trainer's arm around him. You're like, what the heck just happened? And that was at Tampa, by the way, as well. House of Horrors for the damn Blue Jay. Anyway, absolutely. The versatility that David Phelps would have brought, I absolutely guarantee many of these bullpen-blown games along the way would not have been that case. You can run David Phelps in the 7th, 8th, 9th. He's so versatile. Yeah. I'm really glad you shouted that out. That was a huge loss. Yes. That was a huge loss.
And that was another thing that I think a lot of us forgot about the bullpen, is that in April, they were dominant.
My God, Tyler Chatwood was killing it. What?
100%. 100%. He was killing it. Not only that, if you think about the injuries that were happening in April and how we were just like, how is this bullpen surviving on next man up like this?
Yeah.
It's because it was a well-built bullpen to start with. Now,
yes, absolutely.
You start shedding those high leverage options away, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, like, we've got to depend on Tyler Chatwood after they've removed the sticky stuff and he's struggling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great point, Adam, talking about what bad luck that was, Mike. Honestly, I don't even think this is my Blue Jay fandom hat on. I think I could just be objective here. I've never seen a season with injuries like this. And to your point, Scott, that was the domino that started it all. News about Kirby Yates. What's this? Oh, crap. Yeah, that's where it all started. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Before we let you go here, Craig, and number one, thank you so much for taking the time.
I
really have enjoyed chatting ball with you, buddy. We'll have you back anytime here. Before I do let you go, though, I do wish to talk a little bit about Joey Votto, because the man at 37 years old has reinvented himself as a ball player. He has become a power hitting first baseman when, if you just go back 10 years ago, he was not that he didn't hit home runs, but you know, he hit for average. He was a high on base percentage guy, great glove at third. Do you think it's possible that we see Joey Votto as the third Canadian to enter Cooperstown?
Wow, you guys are hitting me with some bangers here. I really think that what we've seen this season will have to continue, to be totally honest with you.
Yep.
Now you've got an amazing story, because now you've got a player for so much of his career was good defensively, was a good leader in that clubhouse, and was a good hitter, and then reinvented himself. Look what he did in the second half of his career. Actually became a prolific home run hitter. And might I add, gentlemen, especially if it continues the way this season has, because in the past we've seen Cincinnati fade in the second half.
Yeah.
What have we seen Joey Votto do with this team this season? He's led them on a playoff charge, a very unlikely playoff charge. So Joey Votto is not only going to be this level of hitter going forward, but it's going to be contributing to a perennial playoff contender, well, that's just going to have him in the news cycle all the damn time. You know how we Canadians are about our CanCon, right? So we'll be hyping him up big time. That's the sort of momentum that I could see propelling him into a Hall of Fame conversation. So
you know,
I wouldn't want to see
really
more
help
of it.
Him?
What's that?
DH in the
league. Hello.
Right?
Do you have an American League team in mind? Do you have an American League East team in mind, from Toronto in mind? And there's a left-handed bat, Scott, by the way. There's a left-handed bat. Hello.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, I don't know.
Even just having the NL add the DH, though, would be...
Yeah.
Oh, please. Oh, my God.
For Votto,
that,
right?
Please? My God. Are you kidding? Universal DH. Where are you?
Yeah.
That was the only good part about COVID last season. That was the only good part about that season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all these rule changes they did, I'm really not into any of them. But the universal DH, like, I don't understand the joy of watching pitchers swing the bat. I don't get it. And I know that I am biased because I'm an American League fan, have followed the Jays all my life, and when the Expos left in 2001, I pretty much stopped watching National League Baseball. So I'm well aware this is a me thing, but I don't get it. I don't get the appeal.
Look in our own division. Look in the American League East. The DHs are Nelson Cruz, Giancarlo Stanton. Who am I missing here?
George Springer.
J.D. Martinez. Are you kidding me? There's people you'll pay to go see. When have you ever looked at Twitter and said, "Oh my God, did you guys see that double switch last night in the Padres game? Hell, oh my God!" No, there's nothing exciting there. I don't buy the whole strategy thing. And for me, not only does it take the number nine hitter completely obsolete, but same with the eight hitter. If I'm a pitcher, I'm just going to pitch around the eight hitter. I couldn't care less who he is because I know I've got a sure out coming up in the pitcher. So my God, universal DH, please.
100% agreed, my man. Thank you so much for joining us. Check Craig Ballard out on TikTok, Jays Talk, of course. What's your Twitter handle, my man?
Craig Ballard 77. So CraigBallard, and then the number 77.
Craig is a joy on Twitter as well. Follow him there. Thanks again,
Appreciate it, man.
Take care.
Gentlemen, what a pleasure. What a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.